to introduce you to the amazing Gareth Thompson and Beth Griffin. And welcome to all the lovely cat people and people we haven't seen before. Welcome to everybody. We're really excited. Gareth has been a friend and colleague of mine for about 6 years now, and he is just the most wonderful human being. He's got an awesome story. He is very, very gifted in so many areas that it just beggars belief, really. So at the moment, he's the centre manager for our Light Church in Bradford. He also runs a job club, manages a job club there, and which he'll kind of go through with you. And he is a member of the national speaker team, and he works on the actual team, which coordinates all the talks 2 days a week. So he is a man of many talents. So really, really excited to have Gareth here. Beth also works for CAP. She is a key supporter, campaign manager. I got this wrong, and she did a presentation the other day. Oh, anyway, I'm not good with titles. But she's amazing as well, coordinates and manages various projects for CAP and does an awesome job with that. So really pleased to have them both here. Thank you. Oh, yeah, yeah. I was going to leave that to Gareth. He's much better at that sort of thing. But anyway, so you'll see lots of stationery on your chairs and stuff. There's also a table at the back. And we just wanted to give you more information about CAP. There's books, and Gareth will tell you a little bit more about that. But CAP is just such a wonderful organisation. This last week we had Martin Lewis of Money Supermarket fame, who's very well known in the finance industry, come and join us, give us an awesome address to our staff meeting. So we were very, very blessed by that, and it's a huge endorsement for CAP. So, CAP is sort of going up, and the fantastic thing is we're Christian, and, that's getting a high profile now, so it's awesome. So, great. Thank you.
There we go. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Great, fantastic. Thank you for having me. Absolutely blessed by that worship time. Gentlemen, thank you for the kind word. I also had one for you. I just saw at one point the song, Keep Sing and I Will and Dance and I Will Shout, and you were there singing, dancing, shouting, and I was just encouraged by that. I was blessed by that, and I just want you to know that God's shining on you for that. He is smiling, and he is saying, child, keep that childlike spirit as you worship, because that is where he meets us in worship, and he can change our hearts in that. And thank you. You were just blessing me. You reminded me of a young Gaz when I first came to faith, and I had all of that, and, it was, honestly, thank you. Thank you so much. So, my name is Gareth Thompson. I'm 30 years old. I'm here today with my beautiful fiancée, Bethany. We are to be married in October, so a couple of months to go. Thank you. And today I'm just going to talk, first of all, I'm going to give you guys my story. I'd like to share with you where I've come from, my past, my history, my journey to faith, my journey to the Lord, and eventually to CAP. And then after that, I'm then going to speak with you about CAP and the work that we do, but primarily through our job clubs. I've just noticed a gentleman who used to come to our CAP job club in Bradford. How you doing? Good to see you. You all right? Sorry, that's just caught me off guard. Awesome. He'll be able to tell you from experience. It's an awesome job club. We're very good at what we do. So I'm going to talk with you about that and just CAP's heart in that and what we're doing across this nation, across the world, in Canada, New Zealand, Australia, Jersey the other month we were down there, and potentially soon in the next few years. You never know where we'll be. But anyway, I will start with my story. So I just want to just briefly go over again my role at CAP. So yes, I run a CAP debt centre from the Light Church in Bradford. I visit people in their homes, help them get the paperwork together, and help them on their journey on their way out of debt, with head office giving all the expert advice and expertise that they've built up over 22 years of being an organisation that's got a lot of clout in the industry, and they get some great deals for our clients. And I also run a CAP job club. I do that 3 times a year, 8 to 10 week courses, again at the Light Church in Bradford, and we see about half of the people who come through our job club find work. And if they don't find work, they get into training. If they don't get into training, they're volunteering, and we're helping them on their way to finding full-time paid employment or whatever works for them. People come to us in different stages of life. And then, yeah, 2 days a week in the speaker team at CAP. I arrange talks. I don't necessarily do a lot of them, but I'm sure I will be doing more. Deb's going to watch this now, and then she's going to be like, Gaz, I'm sending you everywhere. Yeah. Amen. but yeah, I've worked at CAP for about 4.5 years. I've known Deb's that whole time. She was my first manager when I first came in. I was actually turned down for the role 4 times before I actually got in. And I was at God's timing, totally God's timing. I wasn't ready for it when I first tried to apply at CAP. Eventually, I got a job doing the job I was applying for in the first place, and got in there, rewrote the script, changed things up, became a bit of a powerhouse on the phone team, ringing churches, telling them why CAP is good. So I'm very skilled at telling people why CAP is good. So yeah, so I just want to take you through my formation. Any good church talk starts with alliteration. All the F's is this one. So it's Gaz Thompson fighting for my faith and my formation. And then I'm going to go through onto my faith, onto forgiveness, and then to my future. I think it's just going to be a great little way to take you through this. So when I was a kid, 6 years old, my mum and dad separated. My dad left the family home. My mum took it quite hard and became an alcoholic, quite abusive and aggressive towards me and my 2 younger brothers. And life was tough at that point. I would often have to take my brothers from school to then go after school to find my mum in a pub to get the house keys from her, take my brothers home, feed them, put them to bed. Then my mum would arrive home a few hours later drunk. I would feed her and I'd put her to bed. 6-year-old child, 7-year-old child, 8-year-old child. That was day-to-day life for me. Weekends, I would go to stay at my grandmother's on a Friday night. She was my champion. She was my investor. She gave me a night away from life. She gave me a night away from all the stuff that was going on at home, and she invested in me as a young child. She used to buy me books about dinosaurs, about bugs, about the human body. She would pray for me. She was a devout Catholic woman. she would encourage me to go to church with her on a Sunday morning, and she really was an absolute rock in my life. She was a mother figure. She was much more than that. She was an insight into a relationship with Jesus and God, which as a kid, I never really fully, truly understood, but I just knew in hindsight what she was doing. She was praying for me. She was lifting me up to the Lord. She wanted to bring me out of that darkness that I was in back at home. At the age of 8, I had quite a life-changing situation. So my mum would go out on weekends. I would come home after a Friday, and Saturday I'd be in my room, not doing a right lot, didn't have a lot of friends. My mum would go out Saturday night. Random people would come and babysit for us. Some of them would be family friends, some of them would be family, some of them would be just random people that my mum knew, who she'd say, oh, this is Auntie Sheila. And I'd be like, no, we don't have an Auntie Sheila. But anyway, tonight you're Auntie Sheila, and you're looking after us. Okay, that's normal, all right. One of those people who used to look after me was one of my older cousins, a gentleman. I'm not going to say his name. But he decided to abuse his authority in that situation and did some pretty nasty, horrible things to me as a young man for about a year of my life. Didn't do anything with my 2 younger brothers. It was just me. I don't know the reasoning for that. Never really asked. But yeah, so as you can imagine, 8-year-old, that changes something. It really does change something in you, and I became a recluse. I became aggressive. You know, people used to think I was placid, but actually I was like, I just didn't want to be around people. And I really, really struggled day to day and at school. My behavior was affected. Teachers didn't know what was going on. Eventually, I put up the courage after about a year of this happening, most weekends. Eventually put up the courage to tell my mum about it. November 11th, 1995. I remember the date because poppies were everywhere. Everyone was having poppies on. I just remember that as being a key thing in my head. And that troubled me for a number of years after. Every November 11th, I would just, I'd do some of the things my mum would do. I would just drink a bottle of whiskey, and I'd just do something stupid and ridiculous around the time, and it just really affected me. And I told my mum, she told the police got involved, he went to prison. And I went back to school. When I got back to school, my 2 younger brothers had told everybody what had happened. So next thing you know, I'm getting bullied. I'm getting picked on. I'm the victim here, yet for some reason, kids at school thought that would be appropriate to then call me names like bum boy and just beat me up and all the rest of it. And then I was being counseled at school. I had a counselor who used to come into my lessons, used to take me out and stuff, and I'd just be like, look, he'd go, how are you feeling? And I'm like, I don't know how to express how I'm feeling. I have no clue. So that was tough. Secondary school, get to the end of secondary school, 15 years old. My mum had been out drinking. She came home. She said, oh, you're a young man. You can look after yourself. get out of the house. I'm like, what? She's like, just go. I don't want you around anymore. You're old enough to get yourself a job. You're old enough to finish school. Just go. She threw me out. Homeless. 8 weeks. I slept in a skip behind the back of Currys in Keighley. One of these big metal ones, just full of cardboard. It was the safest, driest, comfiest place I could find. And I had to fight for it some nights. And I tell you, one of the scariest times of my life was when I was sleeping inside that skip, because there were a big open space and a lot of young lads around the area, so they would all come down and play football. And if you're playing football as young lads, you always need a goal. So this big skip was the goal. So it's young lads sitting in front of it, and I'm inside this skip, hoping and praying that they don't find me, because I don't want them to know that I'm a homeless kid living in a skip, but I also don't know what they're going to do if they find me. So I'm scared. And every time that ball hit the side of this skip on the inside, there was an almighty thunder noise, just boom. And every time that happened, I swear, I didn't know what to do. And fear just gripped me every time that ball hit that skip. Eventually, I found myself in a homeless hostel. The council stepped in when I was 16. There were some rules or something around, like, once you're 16, you're able to get some support and help. And this was 15 years ago now, so I don't know if the rules have changed since. I hope they have. But at 16, I found myself in a homeless hostel for 2 years in Bradford. Again, that wasn't even a nice place to be in. People were doing drugs, and they were fighting each other, and it was just kind of like you had to be mates with the right people, or you would get robbed, or you would have all your stuff taken, or you would just be treat like rubbish. So that was it. That was it for me at that point. And then I managed to get myself a job. I managed to get myself out of there into my own place. I had a girlfriend at the time. Life was kind of a little bit better. I hadn't learned anything as a young kid about relationships or anything about money management or anything like that. So every time I got a job, I'm like, great, cool, awesome. Da-da-da-da. I'd rack up some debts. I'd lose my job. Okay, I'd try and find another job, get a job. Then I'd lose a job. Then I'd get a job. Then I'd lose a job. I'm just bouncing in and out of work. Nothing was ever constant. And because of that chaos and that, it's the way that it was, everything around me financially was an absolute mess. And then one day we came to Bradford, me and my girlfriend, and I came to get a piercing. If you notice, I've got a few bits of metal hanging off me. And I came to get my tongue pierced. And I remember this because while I was talking to everybody, I was like, because my tongue was all swollen and everyone was eating pizza and I had to eat soup. But yeah, so I came over to Bradford and we bumped into some of my girlfriend's old friends. And I didn't know this at the time, but this is the first time Cap kind of came into my life. These two guys were Cap clients. I didn't know this at the time, but they'd found Christ through their local church, through Cap. And so they're at church, but I didn't know this either at the time. So we're playing Call of Duty, we're drinking some beers, we're just getting to know these people. And then we did that for a couple of weekends. One morning they said to us, oh, do you want to come to church with us? I was like, yeah, all right, no problem. I knew church from when I was young with my nan, a Catholic church. So we go, we rock in, and I'm expecting pews, I'm expecting an organ, I'm expecting the father who shakes your hand at the door, but don't talk to him afterwards. Because he's around, you can't talk to him during the service, you don't engage with anything, just read your hymns and sing songs. And that's all I thought it would be. But then I rock in and it was actually quite similar to this. Chairs out, open space, live band, screens. I was like, this is awesome. This is great. This is pretty cool. There's people dancing up the front, there's kids running around with flags and stuff. And I was like, all right, cool, I can give this some space. And during the worship, I was singing these songs, and there was this one song that came on about love. I can never remember what the song was, but there was just something about love. And in the middle of it, I'm crying. And I'm like, I don't know why I'm crying. Now, I'd put on this massive, tough exterior. In the song there, it was weak made strong. For me, I was weak, but I was trying to be strong. I was trying to put out this facade of I'm in control, I'm all right, me, I'm a hard man, I'm okay. And I've got tears running down my face. And I'm trying to figure out what it is. And I break down in the worship, and I just felt my heart just break. And some guy came to me after the service, and he just said, you all right? And I was like, I don't know what that was. He goes, that was love. That was Jesus's love. You've just experienced it. And he spoke a word. He just said, you've just experienced love for the first time, and it's broke you. I was like, whoa, man, that's deep. And I was like, that's deep. I'm 23, it's my first day at church, and I'm getting hit with something like that. That's deep. And at the time, I'll be honest, I wasn't ready to deal with that. I wasn't ready to engage with that. And a little bit of time went on, And I thought, hey, cool, right, I'm a Christian now. Made a decision there at that point. I was like, cool, I'm going to give this thing a shot. I'm a Christian now. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be great. There's going to be no problems here. I've got people around me. Everything's great. And then I got married. And my first marriage, there's some words there, obviously, you can figure out where this is going. So I got married. And on my wedding day, my grandmother was there. And she, like I said, she was a real pillar of faith for me as a kid. And my grandmother, she had dementia for the last few years of her life, and she'd forgotten everybody. Like, she was in hospital, and all the family had been to see her, and she was like, get away from me, who are you, get away from me, who are you? And I walk in, and she goes, Gareth. And my nan had a really thick Welsh accent. My family from Cnethley, the name Gareth, as you can tell. So my nan, she sat there in her bed, and she goes, Gareth, who are all these people? I don't know who they are. Coming in here, sticking things in me. Get rid of them, will you? I've got a good Welsh accent. I've lived around it. So she was just confused. She didn't know what was going on. So she moved into social housing and supported housing. She used to stick knives and toasters and other stuff. Just, it was really tough, really, really tough as a family to be around that as it was happening and for her to be in that. But on my wedding day, she was there and she was sat front row and she seemed like more herself than usual. She made a joke. I had a purple streak in my hair at the time, so purple and black hair. I was a wild child. And she said, and she shouted at some point near the beginning. Good thing things hadn't got started. She just sat in a wheelchair and she just shouted, Gareth, we washed that out your hair. You look stupid. I was like, thanks, Nan. Cheers. I love you too. But no, she felt more herself that day. She really did feel more herself. And I've got a quick photo, actually, if you can just skip on a couple of slides. I've got a quick photo here. Not that one. Well, that's way on. A bit further back. Nope, not that one. You're giving it all away. There we go. That's fine. Not that one either. There we go. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a little story about this picture. So this is on my wedding day, right? And we're all outside getting photos taken. Now, that's my nan. Bless her, man. I love that woman. Anyway. So she's there. I've kind of moved the purple over so you can't quite see it that well. But anyway, so I'm there. And as you can see, she's in a wheelchair. And I've got my hand on her shoulder, right? Now, my nan's a bit cheeky. So what she'd done there, I don't know if you can see the handle of the wheelchair. It's a little red thing. Yeah? I'm stood behind her and she wheeled her chair backwards. And the handle hit me in the groin. And just as the photo was taken, and I'm like... She's got this smile on her face. And I swear to you, afterwards, she turned around and she goes, I got you. Anyway, so my nan had to leave early because she was unwell. And I said to her, I said, look, Nan, thank you for coming. Thank you, and I love you. Thank you, I love you. And she went home. Then I, obviously, wedding night, next morning I'm getting a shower, and my phone goes, and I'm in one of these fancy showers where it all hits you from all sides. I was a bit confused what's going on here. It's there, it's not everywhere, what's that? But anyway, so I'm in the shower, and my wife comes in, she goes, oh, phone's ringing. I was like, oh, what's up? So, oh, it's your brother. I was like, ah, don't worry about it. It's wedding morning, tell him to go away. She's like, no, it's serious. I was like, no, it's fine. No, Gareth, it's really serious. You need to talk to your brother. So I picked up the phone, and he's in tears on the other side. He goes, Gaz, Nan's dead. My bottom fell out. I just did not know what to do in that moment. I was very mad at God for that. I'm just going to be open and honest. I thought, you become a Christian, things get good. I thought, you become a Christian, bed of roses, everything's fine. It's not the case. Life still throws stuff at us. It's how we deal with them. How we deal with them and remain in the faith that makes us strong and makes us more Christ-like. But in that moment, I was not ready for that. And I kind of stepped away. Stepped away from God, stepped away from faith. Didn't really engage with it past that point. And it shook me. And then I lost my job. And my wife had an affair and left me. And my life fell apart. And I'm living in a box room. Everything had gone. Everything. And I'm in this box room. I'm alone. I'm in darkness. I don't know what to do. I'm playing video games all night and sleeping in all day. I've got no routine. I'm depressed. I'm drinking. Everything's an absolute mess. And then this guy called Dave Kendall comes over, and he's from the church I've been coming to. He comes and knocks on my door. He goes, "Gaz, you know me, mate. I'm a friend. I want to help you out. I want to help you get your life back on track. I want to help you sort your stuff out." He took me on this journey of forgiveness, of really getting to grips with what it means to be a child of God, what it means to have him as a heavenly father and not my earthly dad who was never around. I had to really grip that. I had to grip that I can find love in him and not love in other people who just, I needed to rediscover that. And I reconnected with my mum, and we talked, and I asked her, I told her I forgive her, and I asked her to forgive me if I'd hurt her, and we've still got a relationship now, which is great. And I found my dad. I was able to talk with my dad, and I told him I forgive him, and we've got a relationship still now. Ideally, they're not as great as they could be, but hey, you know, we're working on it. We're on a journey. And then we're going through all this stuff, and you know, trying to forgive my ex-wife, and trying to deal with this massive issue of forgiveness. I was carrying a lot of it. I was mad at God still for my nans. I had to try and, how do you forgive God? Like, really, it should be the other way around, right? He forgives me, not me forgiving him. And I just had to get rid of all of this hurt and pain. And we got to a bit of a sticky point, my abuser. And I tell you, if you ever want to know the power of God, you ever want to know the power of prayer, we prayed the night. We got through all this stuff, and we just sat there and we prayed together. And I just said, look, I can't do this. I don't know where he is. I know nothing about him, anything. I can't forgive him to his face, so God, just help me do something with this. And I just gave it over. I was like, I cannot do it. God, please, you need to help me in this. And I'm working at CEX. I don't know if anyone knows CEX, like a computer exchange store. Yeah, it's full of kids who look like me, let's be fair. they used to call us dirty moshers. I don't know if that's still a relevant term. But anyway, it's full of guys who look like me. And if you've ever gone to CEX, you also know they've always almost got a massive long queue going all the way out the door, right? Everyone's coming in to trade in the DVDs and mobile phones, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, so I'm serving in there. I'm on the tills, working away, doing my job, and there's this massive long queue, right? Goes right the way off, to probably past that wall. Anyway, so I'm here, I'm working and working. My abuser walks in. Okay, I'm not an 8-year-old kid anymore. I'm a 23-year-old man at this point. I've been doing a bit of pro wrestling. I can handle myself. I see him walking. Now, the first reaction was, I'm going to jump the counter. I'm going to make him feel what I felt as a kid. It's not the godly answer, obviously. But anyway, first thing that ran through my head, second thing that ran through my head, what on earth am I going to do? Whoa, hang on a minute. And he joins the queue. And he's coming down the queue. And I'm thinking, oh, right, okay, I can avoid him. I don't have to serve him. I can make an excuse here. I can get around it. So I start taking my time as I'm serving people. I start taking my time as I'm going through stuff. And I'm like, he's still in the queue. He's not going down. He's still in the queue. He's still in the queue. 4 or 5 customers later, he's still in the queue. God had other plans that day. Whatever I tried to do, God wanted me to confront this, and God wanted me to meet my abuser. I had to serve him. Serve the person who did what he did to me. It's powerful. Serving. At the time, I didn't think of it like that. Obviously, later on, I matured in faith. I understand what being a servant is. But actually, to serve him was huge. So I had to serve him. And I went and got his DVDs, and I got his stuff. And I sat there. And in that moment, I just thought to myself, look, guys, you've got two options here. You can make a move, and you can deal with this. Or you can make an excuse, and you can let the moment pass you by, and you can regret it for the rest of your life. So I took his hand, put the money in his hand, and I held him. Now, probably in this moment, he's thinking, oops, because I've just got a hold of him. I saw fear in his eyes. I'll be honest, I did. I saw fear in his eyes. And I pulled him in, and I just told him, looked him dead in the eye, and I just said, I forgive you for what he did. I forgive you for what he did. And he left with a faraway look in his eyes. He's like, I don't know what's just happened. And I had to take a break. I went upstairs, splashed my face in water, like, what? From that moment, I made the choice to be a follower of Jesus. I made a choice to let life throw what it wants at me. I can ride those storms. I can ride those waves. I've got faith in God, who is bigger than all things. And in that moment, I was like, you know, whatever you want to throw at me, bring it. Just bring it. Yeah? I did get back in my wife. She had a second affair. And I tell you, I treated the second one a lot better than the first one. I mean, you know, Debbie, you were my manager at the time. You remember helping me through that process. It was big, but I was maturing it, and I was giving it to God, and I was writing it, and I was like, it's okay. If you ever got anybody in your life who's hurting you, forgiveness doesn't mean that you give them free rein to treat you like a doormat. You can still eliminate people from your life if they're going to cause you pain and hurt, and I had to do that. See you later. Forgiveness is not about them. It's about you. It's releasing you from that pain and hurt. It's not about giving them a free pass or about giving them anything other than they know. You don't even have to tell them half the time. Just release it from yourself. And then CAP, man, supported me so much. Like the CAP head office, they love their staff. They really treat us really, really well. And they helped me through that whole process. And life got back on track. And yeah. Things were picking up. I'm working at CAP, doing great stuff. I found a good church. I joined the Light Church. Life's really steamrolling. And now we just want to see what some of the things I'm doing now. So, just want to pop on to the next slide. I realized my dream of being a pro wrestler. Not only a pro wrestler, a Christian pro wrestler. There's not many of them around. I've only met a couple in 7 or 8 years of doing this. Won a championship belt the other week. I brought it with me. Ugh. I think maybe some of the kids might want to get some pictures of this or something later. Maybe you want to. I'll just pop that there. Yeah. So I thought I'd bring that with me. But yeah, so that's opened up so many doors for me, so many avenues. I'm going to be touring churches, putting on wrestling events, sharing my story, introducing people to Jesus and the gospel. That's going to be a thing I'm doing. I'm launching it in June at CVM, Christian Vision for Men in Swindon. 1,500 people, a ring plopped in the middle of a field. I'm just going to do my thing, let Jesus show up and see what he does. So that's the thing. And then if you want to move on to the next slide. My story was featured in Sorted magazine, which is a men's Christian magazine that goes out to over 100,000 people globally. They've really been massive supporter of me. They kind of got this whole wrestling thing up and running. As a center manager and a job club manager, I've been, you know, given quite a lot of platforms to share, not only about CAP's work, but about my life and stuff that I'm doing. Obviously, the BBC was supposed to be here. Documentary's going on. God is really, really using my muck and life to bring glory to him through what CAP's doing, through my own story. And then ultimately, the next one, my future is bright. My future is Beth. So the picture on the left there was at a fundraising dinner. I don't always dress that smart. Just saying. And on the right-hand side, that was actually our engagement day just outside Bradford Cathedral. She's got a beautiful little ring on. It's awesome. And she was a little teary, admittedly. I was also a little teary, but it's fine. Men can cry. Men can cry, all right? Men can cry. Amen. Yeah. And yeah, October 21st, we're going to get married, and our future is going to be Christ-centered, loving, caring, compassionate. We're going to help people. We're going to do amazing stuff. I love you. Thank you. So, let's move on to CAP. So, CAP, amazing organization. I'm going to talk to you today about CAP job clubs, mainly because I just have such a heart for it. And I think we often talk about the debt help, but I just kind of want to really introduce you guys to one of the group services that we have. So I'm excited to be talking about job clubs. It really is, legitimately, one of the greatest things that we do. I think the debt help is fantastic, but job clubs affects so many people. So many people, whether you're in work or you're out of work, or you're training or you're volunteering, whatever you're doing, one of the worst questions you can be asked by anybody, if you don't have an answer, is, what do you do? Because the first thing, when you meet someone, oh, nice to meet you, I'm Gaz. Oh, great, cool. What do you do? If you don't have an answer for that, whoo, that's shameful. People feel shame. People feel worthlessness. They feel a lot of rubbish. And I'm going to tell you about Ben. So Ben is a very good friend of mine. And he, at a time when he was, he was living in darkness. He really was living in darkness. It really started to creep in when he'd left school. He had dreams and ambitions. Ben's a self-taught opera singer. And he is really good. At what he does. I've heard him sing in places, and he's just taken over the room, and he wanted to be an opera singer. He had dreams, he had ambitions, he wanted to work through that. And quickly realized that world wasn't what it thought it was. He applied for many jobs, never heard anything back. All he ever got was rejection after rejection after rejection. And gradually, the darkness grew blacker. He didn't know where to go, what to do, which direction to go in, lost and frustrated. He couldn't get anywhere. Hope and light were fading fast. For Ben, he did nothing for years. He never socialized, he never left his home. When he first told me that he'd been living in his room for 8 years, never left his bedroom in 8 years. Now, I've been in his bedroom. It's a very small space. He lives in an attic room, and he's got his double bed, his TV, wardrobe. You can't move. Like, you were literally doing this around. There was no space. I'm just trying to imagine, how do you live in that space? Very dark, because he had a Velux window, but he had it blacked out. Just very dark, just in this space, probably just in his bed for 8 years. Just losing hope and losing just, he doesn't know life. He didn't know relationships. He doesn't know anything about how to live in the real world. He's just in a box, in a black hole, just sat there. Man, just dying in this hole. No life to him. Just gradually fading away. And the thing is, like, he got one point, he said that he didn't know what's the point anymore, and he considered suicide. And for Cap, you know, 1 in 3 people who call us have ever thought about or attempted suicide. And that's a massive, massive thing. If you look at mental health and depression and the effect that poverty has on that, it's huge. And a lot of people, even in the worst and serious situations, have got no breathing room, no space, and they are bombarded by letters, phone calls, knocks at the door, bailiffs, all that kind of stuff. And when you are in that dark spot, the last thing you need is someone coming to say, I'm going to take your stuff. I'm going to take you to court. I'm going to charge you more money. You're in debt. I'm just going to add more to it. Like, you don't, man, people just don't know any other way out. And the thing is that if you step outside the doors of this church here in this community, I will say, when we drove up, apart from the geese giving us trouble down the bottom, when we walked up, I was like, this is a community church. Some places call themselves community church, and they're right way up on a hill, out of the way of everybody. But you guys are smack bang in the middle of is this a housing estate? Is that right? Yeah. So there are probably people right now in these houses. And if we use the statistics, there's probably a couple in these houses right now who maybe sat in darkness with the windows shut because they don't want people to know they're in. Never going out because they can't socialize. They don't want to socialize. They don't want to be sat around a group of people who all got high-flying jobs and they're doing nothing. They're probably in debt, and they've probably thought about or contemplated suicide. Right here, poverty affects everyone. It really does. Debt affects everyone. Here we go. So 22% of people miss meals. 51% couldn't sleep. 23% suffered with mental ill health. 22% thought about or attempted suicide. That's our job club members across the country. That's what they've told us. That's what we've seen. People are oppressed. People are trapped, almost living in a prison, living in darkness, with no hope. And these are people who God loves, okay? God loves everyone. I think you could say he really loves the poor. He always talked about it. Jesus always talked about the poor, always talked about people in need, always talked about how we can bring light into those situations. God knows the darkness and misery that poverty causes. It robs people of their dignity, struggle to feed their children, robs them of their closest relationships. Arguments about money, they ruin relationships. Most relationships fail either because of Facebook these days, which I don't get, or money problems. Money problems is a massive issue. A lot of couples don't even know how to, when they get together, to actually merge their finances. I trained yesterday to deliver the CAP Money course, which is a budgeting course that we run. One of the sessions is how couples combine finances. Because a lot of people, they just don't talk about it, and they never talk about it. And it causes issues in families. Now, I'm hoping and praying that, you know, money, we steward it well. We talk about money as a church. Often we do, and I'm hoping that couples, as you're doing marriage prep and all that kind of stuff, you are talking about finances. But most people out in the open world, they don't do marriage prep. They just don't. People get in relationships all the time and they just don't do any of that stuff and they just end up arguing over it and it causes problems. But we have a God of light. We have a God who, yeah, God wants to break into those situations. God wants to bring light into those dark pits. God is light. There is no darkness in him at all. 1 John 1:5. And God, who in the beginning said, let there be light in the darkness, has been calling his people all throughout Scripture to help the poor, to bring his light into the darkness of poverty. In Isaiah 58, God outlines what he really wants his people to do in the face of poverty. And this is how he wants us to honor him and how he wants us to worship him. I'm just going to move on to some of this. So, it is not the kind of fasting I have chosen, to loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter, when you see the naked to clothe them, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood? When your light will break forth like the dawn and your healing will quickly appear. If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. When we help the poor and spend ourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, darkness is replaced by light and the night is replaced by the noonday. Amen. He's calling us to be a light in the darkness for people. He's calling us as a church, as individuals, as organizations, as employers, as friends, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, kids, to bring light into each other's lives. In John 9:5, Jesus said, well, I'm here in the world. I am the light of the world. Then he passed the baton on to us, to me and you. You are the light of the world, it says in Matthew 5:14. A bit like the Olympic torch that carries fire, Jesus has passed the torch of light onto you. It's now in your hands, and you will be the ones who take this out into the world. And you may even pass that baton on to somebody else. In my story, in my journey, Dave Kendall came into my life. He had that torch of light for me. He came into my dark hole and helped me out of it. And he then passed that baton on to me. And he said, Gaz, now you go. You go help people like Ben. You go help people through the debt center and other stuff that you're doing in your life. You go mentor. You go be the light for somebody else. Jesus' mission was to bring light into every dark corner of the world. You're to shine his light and hope where there is despair. Jesus' mission was to proclaim good news to the poor. And so is ours. Jesus' mission is our mission. In Isaiah, he says, he is sending you to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim release for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners. As Jesus declared in his opening speech to outline his mission, that was in Isaiah. That was him just saying what he's doing here. I'm here to bring light into the darkness. And the good news is that's exactly what a Camp Job Club does. It's exactly what we do. For people who've been written off and out of work for years, there will now be hope through a Cap Job Club. We've got 162 churches running a Cap Job Club, over 600 churches nationwide partnering with Cap. It's an amazing number. And each of those job clubs vary from 4 to 6 people coming along, 25, 30. I heard a story the other day of a job club that's got 46 people at it in their area. All of those people in that moment can have something a little bit different. Now, as a job club manager, I can tell you what's different. You go to the job centre, you walk in, yeah, take a seat, all right, see you in a minute. You get through, sit in front of your work coach, all right, what have you done? What have you been doing? I've been looking for work. Your thing doesn't say that. You need to work harder, all right, off you go. That's it. You come to a Cap Job Club, hey, how you doing? You all right? Nice to see you. Come on, do you want a tea or a coffee? Come here, come sit down. What's your week been like, mate? What's happening? That's an hour. We have an hour community time. An hour. Just eating together, sharing together, getting to know the person, encouraging them, engaging with them. Maybe we might do some one-on-one coaching, look at their individual needs. They'll go through the course material, and we build from step to step to step. People are coming to us who probably don't really want a job sometimes. We get a few of those. But I tell you, they're coming on day one. Session one, motivation. Why do you want a job? Pros and cons of being in and out of work. I tell you, by the end of that first session, they leave going, yeah, I need to get a job. I want to provide for my kids. I want to be able to feed myself. I want to be able to do cool things. I want to have a life. I don't have to worry about my money. I don't want to have to worry about telling someone what I do. I want a purpose. I want to move forward in life. And they'll leave that session and they'll come on and we'll do everything else that we do. We teach them how to build a great CV. We teach them interview practice. We teach them cover letters. One of the tips we gave to a couple of our job club guys, write your cover letter once you've researched the company and you've done all that. tailor your CV to the job that you're going for. And on the end of your cover letter, pop this one little line on. Enjoy this cup of Yorkshire tea while you read my CV. Pop a tea bag in the letter with it. Yeah? One of the guys, seriously, this works. Seriously, one of the guys, James, his name was, he said, that's not going to work. That's not going to... He's like, go on, try it. And he did. And he took it. And he got an interview. And on the interview, the person who opened the letter said to him, I wish you'd put two tea bags in because I like my tea strong. It works. But what we're doing is we're giving them tools, okay? We're equipping them. But ultimately, we're giving them self-belief. We're bringing their confidence up. And we're giving them new ways of thinking. And it's all good quality stuff. We've got a national partnership with the DWP. They know how great we are. Job centres are sending people to us. One of my greatest referral sources is our job centre. They're always sending people to us. They're always bringing me in for meetings to tell them how they can do their job better. Like, it's seriously that way. It's just what we do. They might get invited on a CAP discovery break, a short holiday where we give them some space to think about the bigger things of life. And because we're CAP, we're able to share with them, we're able to pray for them, we're able to offer them hope in Jesus. We have that right because we're a Christian organization. And they know who we are from day one. When they walk in, we know who we are. It's written on the tin. We are Christians against poverty. And yes, we've got our other services. We've got our debt centers. We've got our life skills courses. So life skills is helping people learn how to manage their low income and make it go further, learn how to cook meals, look at healthy relationships. Because people on low income, they can really, really have to struggle. And trying to make their budget stretch and make them live better can really, really help people. And it really kind of comes quite close inside with job clubs. A lot of people doing job clubs could probably do life skills as well. And then recently our Fresh Starts, which helps people with addictions and dependencies. And, you know, we're not looking at high damage stuff like drugs and other stuff like that. We're actually looking at stuff that really grip people's lives, like Facebook, like internet shopping, like eating habits, really, really low level, low damage stuff. But again, we're just bringing people freedom and bringing them out of it. And every year, CAP brings good news to 21,500 people. And that's just this year, past couple of years. For every new centre that we open, obviously those numbers increase and we're reaching more and more people. So 16,000 people work their way out of debt through over 300 churches who open debt centres. 2,500 people going debt-free every year. Now, each one of those people, that's not just one person, that's a family, majority of the time. That's a relationship restored, that's a marriage saved, that's kids going to bed, not on sleeping bags, but in a proper bed. They're not having to make a decision between heating their home or eating their food. They're not having to decide between getting school uniform for the kids or putting a little bit extra on the electricity. They're free from that. Their life's changed. And then you've got £3 million worth of debt being repaid or written off every month through CAP. We deal with a lot of debt. It's massive. We've got 93% of our clients staying debt-free. That's huge. That is unsurpassed in the industry, I can tell you that. We launched our client report at the Houses of Parliament early last year. And when we did that in the Houses of Commons with all these people around, they're all coming up afterwards and going, how on earth have you done that? Because even people who go through debt relief orders, people going through insolvency options, still stay debt-free because we encourage and we teach and we train. As we're going through, we're giving them the confidence. 82% of them continue to use the budget to stay in control of their money after we've finished with them, with their debt stuff. It's fantastic. So the other group services run a similar way to job clubs, 8 weeks normally. We do course material, coaching, community time, really key community time. But all of this is wonderful, and all of this is brilliant. But what Jesus did is he brought light into people's lives of acts of care and compassion. And it's God's kingdom coming. And at CAP, we don't want people who are just going to turn up the dimmer switch. We want people who are going to flood people's lives with light. And Martin Lewis said that CAP are unsurpassed when it comes to debt help. When he visited our head office last week, the first thing he said was, I wish you guys didn't exist. Hey, we want to put ourselves out of a job. We don't want to be having to deal with poverty in the country, but it's here and it's real and it's here now and it's in your community. And we can step up and fix it with CAP. He's a massive advocate for us, is Martin. So as God's church, we're sent to call people out of darkness into his wonderful light. As Jesus said in John, I've come into the world as a light, so that no one who believes in me should stay in darkness. He's calling everyone out of darkness. For you are a chosen people. You are royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God. And he called you out of the darkness and into his wonderful light. And there's great beauty in that. There's even greater beauty in the fact that we can also say that there's salvation. We can help you with your debt. We can help you find a job. We can help you overcome your addiction. We can help you make your budget go further. We can help you budget in the first place. But ultimately, there is salvation. Come into the world as a light so that no one who believes in me should stay in darkness. There's a lot of pressure in today's society to not let our light shine brightly. We understand that. But at CAP, having those small shafts of light first come into someone's life really opens them up to make room for those bigger questions, to see God's light really break into their lives. And ultimately, it gives them an opportunity to make a move, make an excuse, but ultimately to see Jesus for who he is through us and maybe say, yeah, I want a piece of that. I want what you've got. You guys are walking lights. We are beacons in our communities, but we're beacons for Jesus. And as we do that, thousands of people will be able to say, as Job did, God rescued me from the grave, and now my life is filled with light, which is amazing. So in 2017 alone, we saw over 1,000 people come to know Jesus, which is incredible, and that's been the same for the past couple of years. But really, I just want you guys to quickly just see Ben's story. We've got a short video just to show you, and it will give you a real insight into Ben and who he is. Just take a few moments.
Where I really would have liked it to be. You know, I had dreams, I had goals, I had ambitions. Applying for these jobs and never hearing back, I didn't know where to go, I didn't know which direction to turn in anymore. It was more like frustration, like I was frustrated that I could get anywhere, you know. Also, there was a lot of mental abuse from my stepfather during this 8-year depression, stuck inside. I didn't want to go down even, didn't leave my bedroom. I never socialised, no friends, no girlfriend, no nothing. My life's just dwindling away, you know, what's the point anymore? I got really depressed, my depression kicked in, my mental health got really bad. It was just a really dark place. It was, I even felt like suicide at one point. One friend from school, who calls Zin, he invited me out one night, and the countless amount of times I said no and said I wasn't going out. This one time, I just thought, you know what, I will go out. And then Gareth, who I met at the bar, he introduced me into going to a job club, and I started going to a job club. You know, I met more friendly people, more nice people, and they were looking for jobs as well as myself. So, you know, I thought, you know, I'm enjoying this, you know, because there's people like me, you know, it's good, it's good atmosphere. It would kind of like let light in. That gave me a newfound confidence in myself. It gave me more self-esteem, you know, more reassurance. My anxiety started to get less. You know, it's just like a lot of that dark stuff and a lot of my dark thought process, a lot of it went away. It was only a matter of time then before I landed myself a job. And it was like, wow, this is what I've wanted. I've got a job. Been there 1 year, 1 month now. You know, doing really well in work. But to have a job, it means the world. I mean, I'm actually doing something with myself. I'm not at home in that dark place. I'm out and about, you know, got my own money. I feel more independent in myself. You know, it's fantastic. Gareth, he actually introduced me into the church where he goes, which was a light church. And over time, I started going frequently to this light church, you know, on Sundays. And I found that everyone were like so, you know, open and nice and smiley and polite, you know, and loving and caring. And then it spiraled off to where I was actually going to the Alpha course. Now I'm on the right path, I know I am, I've got the Lord on my side. So I made the decision to get baptised. It's a totally different world, it's been flipped upside down on its head, and it's like, this is the life I want, I need to leave the darkness behind, you know, no more of that, push forward, you know, it's great. There's no need to worry anymore, you know, you've got the strength of the Lord and Saviour, and that is all you need. All you need is God, because I'm not going to change for nothing.
I love that boy, honestly. He's great, so good. So, there's a couple of things I'd like for you to do this morning. Hopefully you've been really thinking about some of the stuff that we've said, you've been really engaging with it, and thank you for giving me the time. But I'd like two things for you to do this morning. First of all, I'd like you to take a book. We've got Nevertheless, which is the story of Cap from birth up until about a year ago. It's got excerpts from John's diary. It's really, really raw. It kind of shows John's story, where he came from. Again, bringing himself out of debt, learning how to budget, and actually making that a tool that is now helping thousands of people across the country, and how CAP has grown, New Zealand, Canada, Australia, all that kind of stuff. It's fantastic. And we'd like you to, you can see there's some forms on your chair. If you'd like a book, just pop a name and stuff on there, and we'll give you one of those books. It's absolutely fine. But ultimately, we want you to be able to join in with us as we help guys like Ben, guys like me. We've got 29,000 people who regularly give to the work of CAP. Like I said, these aren't people who just want to turn up the dimmer switch. These are people who want to join in with a massive movement of God across this country, bringing light into people's homes and changing lives, saving marriages, giving children food, putting someone into a job, giving them purpose, but ultimately, sharing the good news of Jesus with no limitations, with no kind of messing around. It's on the tin. We know who we are. It's because of people like that that we not only serve the poor, but we keep Christ at the center of everything that we do. So today, would you give monthly to CAP? So together, we can call people like Ben, people like me, potentially people here in Salby Bridge, out of darkness and into freedom from debt, out of darkness into employment and purpose, out of darkness and into financial stability, out of darkness into a fresh start and freedom from the things that grip their lives, and finally, out of darkness and into God's wonderful light. Would you do it today? It's real easy. There's forms you've got on your table, on your chairs. The average amount that people give to CAP is about £12 per month. But hey, we want cheerful givers. If that isn't something that you can move to, then great. Look, anything, it all goes a long way. People give a couple of pounds a month. Some people, if you're here in this room today and you are blessed financially and you're able to give more, fantastic. Please do join in. We have our Vision Sponsor Program. So if someone here in this room thinks that maybe they could stretch to £50 a month or more, we have our Vision Sponsor Program. That is people who would be able to really kind of get an insight into CAP a little bit further more than usual. So John, our founder, he set up this group. He's looking for 1,000 people to help our vision become a reality. The vision being that we want everyone within the UK to be able to access our services. Everyone. There are still some black holes in this country where we don't have a center. And someone will call us, could be one of those three who's considered suicide. They get that phone, it's a desperate plea for help, and we can't help them. It happens. Because we only partner with the church. So we need to reach out into more churches and make that a reality so that doesn't happen. So yeah, could you be one of them? As a vision sponsor, you get a monthly behind-the-scenes update from John's unique perspective. And hey, some of you in this room may already be a life changer. Some of you may already be supporting our work. Thank you. But again, we'd just like to say, maybe could you stretch a little further as well? Maybe could you increase your gift to Christians Against Poverty? So there's a form on your seat, if everyone's found it, if you want to give you a few moments of time to think about that. Myself and Debbie will be out at the stand at the back. We can take your forms there, give you your books. You are at the stand with me, Debbie, just saying. You know your stuff. But yeah, and even if you don't know the amount you want to give and you just want to write something on the form, just put some details on there. We can call you and collect stuff later on. So thank you for having me. Thank you so much for your warm welcome and time today. Sorry I've ran over. I really do apologise, but thank you so much and God bless you all.